Today is June 14th, 2017, and this is episode number 415 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Sure, I'm scared. Yeah, I'm nervous. But I'm super, super excited. Giddy up. Woohoo! Our content is ready. That's the other thing. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. That's how excited I am. I'm just jumping right to the end. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I get why you're nervous. I get why you're excited. And just, you know, I'm excited for you.
Oh, well, thank you, man. I appreciate that. You have, of course, been supportive as always. It's much appreciated.
Well, you know, I call him like I see him, and I'm excited. There you go.
There you go. All there right. You have it.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
No. You always do this. We have to do the thing first. We have to talk about the things.
Oh, I thought we just had
It always comes first.
And on this very special episode of Blossom.
Yeah. You know, I don't feel like she's a very good actress, but she is so funny. She makes me laugh.
She does have a special way about her.
She is a true comedian
and really smart.
Yeah, absolutely. She's off the chart smart.
Yeah,
good stuff. All right, so we are successfully. Speaking of rabbit holes, we did what did we do? We did the thing yesterday. We did the CatMac thing. We did a remote presentation for CatMac talking about WWDC, and it was tons.
CatMac? What's CatMac, Brian? That would be an exciting thing.
Capital Mac User Group in Austin, Texas.
That's right. That's where you get only the best Austin water. And those of you that have been there when I presented before know what I'm talking about. It's our special little thing.
That is true. And it's catmac.org. They're one of the best mugs in the country, for reals.
Yeah, that's true.
And we had a fun time. It was the first time that Jeff and I have done a remote presentation. It was essentially this show.
If we were smart, we would have recorded it and
we would have recorded it, and then you folks would be listening to that right now.
Right. But instead, you have to listen to this.
Yeah, exactly. You have to. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Have you ever pet a chicken before? It's actually really cool.
I have not. However. Wait, hold on. Before we run into trouble. Are these female chickens or these male chickens?
They're female chickens.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about stroking your hen.
I said chicken, not rooster. Oh, they're both chickens, but I would specify if it was a rooster.
Yeah, that's true. That does tend to be what we do. But anyway, so you've been stroking your hen, not anything that would get us in any trouble.
No, not at all. It's actually pretty cool.
All right, thanks for sharing.
Well, we were going down rabbit holes. Why not make a run to the chicken coop too?
Why not, right?
Yeah, is this where you want me to end the show?
Yeah, I'm thinking that maybe let's get to the first topic.
Okay,
company towns. We're gonna talk about company towns.
Yeah, it was kind of funny when this topic came up earlier today, and we threw that line out, and it was like there was this split second of really high tension in the air. Well, everyone just absorbed the word company town,
and then moved on
with the conversation.
Yeah, what sparked this conversation that we're having, that Jeff and I are having right now, and the editorial that I'm going to write based in part on this conversation is a move by Facebook through Mark Zuckerberg. I think it's called the Chan Zuckerberg Foundation. Let's go with that.
I like it.
It may or may not be accurate.
Of like that matters.
But, you know, that has never, ever stopped us before. I'm looking for it. If only there were some kind of way where we could be prepared. Connected to. Prepared, right? That's the word. The Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. So I'm glad I looked. This is a philanthropic organization run by Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, and his wife, Priscilla Chan. Right? They're married, aren't they?
Yeah, they're married.
American philanthropist. Yeah, she's the wife. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I just want to make sure that it wasn't actually a business partner. I couldn't remember what his wife's name was. So anyway, so the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, they are putting up a $5 million fund to help teachers up to, I think it's 60 teachers, in the Facebook headquarters area, put a down payment on a home. So they'll pay up to half of a 20% home down payment for educators with zero interest or monthly payments. Instead, and I'm quoting here from TechCrunch, instead landed is the actual organization that they're funding that's doing this. Landed recoups its investment when the home is sold or refinanced. Oh,
interesting. Okay.
That actually kind of makes me, it's good that we talked about this.
Yeah.
This kind of makes me rethink its viability. So here's the deal. In Silicon Valley, home prices are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I have no business being here anymore, for instance. Home prices are ridiculous. I think the average medium, I mean, depending on where you are, of course, what is Palo Alto average median home price. Yes, the median. We're going to delete that out so that no one. The median home value in Palo Alto is $2.54 million.
Holy
now, to be fair, that's declined 1% over the last year.
Oh, so what? Welcome to the slums?
Oh, my God. $2.5 million is the median home price. Now, checking East Palo Alto, East Palo Alto on the other side of the highway. That's where the poors live. The average home price is $756,000.
Gee, man, so
less than a third. East Palo Alto is a separate home, a separate township, and it is not as economically advantaged as Palo Alto is. So, looking at San Jose.
This is probably making you sad looking up these numbers, isn't it?
San Jose, $870,000. Cupertino is going to be out of this world. San Jose is where Apple just held WWDC. Mm-hmm. Cupertino, oh, good Lord, $1.8 million. It's up 1.2% last year.
Wow.
Santa Clara is $1.06 million. Okay. This is a lot of money, and we're talking homes here. We're not talking mansions, right? Palo Alto. We're not like the Palo Alto with its $2.5 million median price. It's not because Palo Alto is chock full of mansions. Sure, there are a bunch of nice houses in Palo Alto for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also just a lot of houses, or there are houses.
Houses
might be a little bit less. Yeah. These are ordinary Northern California homes. And Although, you know, of course, they constantly, when you're spending that much money on a house, you probably A, have some money, and B, you're going to remodel it and do it up on the inside. But whatever. The point is, it's expensive to live here.
Wait, so and you're spending over $1 million for a fixer-upper?
Oh, yeah, easily. All the time.
Oh, my God.
All the time.
This is why I only visit California.
Yeah, again, that's the median price. Now, anyway, whatever. It's expensive. Crazy expensive to live here. And when you're a teacher or a firefighter or a police officer,
you're not getting paid based on the local economy.
Well, you are to a certain extent, yeah, but you're not being paid enough. I mean, we don't pay our teachers enough in the United States, period.
Right.
You know, and that has only been under threat as teacher unions have been assaulted. And union protections in the first place, as these things have been weakened, teacher salaries are under pressure, and we already don't pay our teachers enough. Now, in Northern California, in particular, but in California, all over the place, it's like living in San Francisco. Keep in mind that San Francisco prices are even worse. Very few teachers who teach in San Francisco can afford to live in San Francisco.
Yeah, my assumption is most teachers that are living in San Francisco are doing so because they have a shared income with someone else who's making a lot more money. I don't know how you do it on a teacher salary.
No, well, you got a lot of roommates, you got a lot of commuting, that sort of thing. So. This has an impact on, you know, Facebook. This has an impact on their employees, right? A lot of teachers, a lot of turnover, for instance, in even the rich school districts, because teachers can't afford to live there. And that's the point behind this investment. You've got the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. They're looking that they plop that money into Landed. The idea is to assist 60 teachers in the Facebook area to be able to get home so that there's not turnover for the teachers teaching the kids that work for Facebook. This is complete self-interest on the part of the Zuckerbergs.
Sure. That doesn't mean there's not value in this for the teachers.
Absolutely. I'm not being insulting. I mean, like they're making we can put it another way. They're making an altruistic move motivated by I'm wanting to throw enlightenment into this. Self-enlightened. They're doing something smart for themselves that happens to help other people. Mm-hmm. And I when we were first talking about it, I was a little bit leery of it because I wasn't sure if charity is really a long term solution for this particular problem. But with the philanthropic group Landed receiving an ownership stake in the house. This actually could work.
Sure. This is assuming that even with the down payment assistance, that teachers will be able to afford the properties.
Yeah, that's true. That would certainly be an ongoing issue. But in general, mortgages are going to cost you less for the same place than it would cost you to rent around these parts.
Sure. But I'm betting... that a lot of these mortgages, people will be paying more per month than the total value of my car.
Say it again.
I'm betting that, well, first, you multitask poorly, but I'm betting yes. that,
that is down.
The monthly mortgage payment that a lot of these teachers will be facing is higher than the total value of my car.
It's probably high. Yeah, sure. It is probably high. And by the way, so Landed isn't taking a 25% equity stake in the home. They're taking a 25% equity stake in appreciation or depreciation of the home's value. So in other words, they're not getting 25% of the total home value by investing 10% into the house. Instead, they're only getting 25% of the difference between what the home is worth when it was bought and when it's sold, be it up or down.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. Cause otherwise that would be a racket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Racket. No, listen, we're going to give you 10% of the value of your home. All we asked for is a mere 25% back.
And Vinny's on his way over to collect.
Yeah, Vinny will be helping to keep an eye on the neighborhood to make sure that nothing goes wrong, because you wouldn't want anything to go wrong now, would you?
That would be a shame if something happened to your house.
It would be, yeah, but they're not doing that. It's 25% of the appreciation or depreciation should the home value go down to it, like we have another crash, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
That could happen. So it's interesting. And when we were talking about this in the morning meeting, was it you that said that the company towns are a thing?
Yeah. That
did
yeah.
you start that?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, you know, company towns haven't been a thing since the early part of the 20th century, late part of the 19th century. And people fought and died to free workers from company towns, because at that time they were abused. A company town was a place essentially designed to turn workers into serfs.
Yeah. And it worked remarkably well.
It worked remarkably well, but especially when you had people patrolling with guns. You had to live in the town. You had to buy everything from the company store,
and you had to use company script. That's how you're right, paid.
You didn't get paid. You didn't get paid in dollars. You got paid in script, and the script could only be redeemed at the company store.
Right.
Hello, 16 tons. I think we've done that before.
Yeah.
That's what that song's about. And the thing is that with all the money that is in Silicon Valley, Apple, Facebook, Google, even, you know, more state companies like Intel, mm-hmm. Uber, on the exact flip side, Uber, all the startups, all the biotech companies, right? There's with all this money, the reality is that the people who take care of the community can't afford to live there, and it may be in capital's best interest to start buying homes or building homes so that people can services people can live and work there. Maybe even some of their own employees.
Yeah. So where I was going with this morning when we were talking about giving these special types of loans for the down payments, is that it doesn't matter if you're giving someone 10% of the loan. If they can't afford the loan itself, they still can't live in the area. And if they can't afford any of the other services that are there, like the rest of the taxes, licensing their cars, you know, whatever it is, just buying food, people aren't going to live there. And if you had a company town, you could insulate your workers from the local economy in a manner of speaking, and make the area affordable by artificially lowering prices.
Of course, there's a flip side of it. What it does is it further, like right now we have the housing crisis in 2008, 2009 resulted in a marked decrease in home ownership in the United States. And Capital bought up distressed properties, by which I mean when people were getting evicted and foreclosed on and all these sorts of things. People with money bought those properties cheap. Mm-hmm. And they're keeping them and they're renting them out. And homeownership has not recovered. And the idea of a bunch of company towns or even just a bunch of corporate-owned homes will only put pressure on that. It keeps people as renters instead of landowners.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not even if this could happen, it's not a perfect solution, but the reality is that these companies have to think about these things because they want to live and work here, right? These companies want to be in Silicon Valley, and Silicon Valley has to function in order for it to function for their companies. And so, and when these companies have all the money, companies like Apple and Google and Facebook, you know, the richest of all these companies, they have all of this money, and they may have to put some of that money to work to make the communities livable for not only their own employees, but for the people that support their employees.
Yeah, that's true. It's a difficult problem because, you know, with property values as they are, how are companies like Facebook going to get the employees they want without like really messing up the economy? And if you start paying all your employees across the board gobs more, then things around you start costing gobs more.
That's the entire principle behind gentrification.
Yeah, and that's not going to help these people that can't afford to live in the areas anyhow.
Right.
Yeah.
I am often critical of Mark Zuckerberg. Mm-hmm. I have to give him a hat tip here. He's not making an investment in a company that's going to turn around and make him money by getting an equity stake in the depreciation or depreciation of properties. Mm-hmm. He is financing a charity that is doing that.
Yeah, this is playing a long game here.
It's not going to directly further enrich him.
No, but it certainly helps his company. It helps the other companies in the area,
for
too.
For sure. It is enlightened self-interest. That was the phrase I was looking for. But 10 minutes ago. Yeah, got it.
Enlightened self-interest when you find the medium price.
He could. Well played. He could have just set up a company that does this. So that, you know, and as it is, Landed will be able to use the money that they make over the long term to help other people.
Yeah, that's a smart move, the way they're setting this up.
Yeah, it really is. It's interesting. Moves like this or, you know, if Apple went to an Apple company town or the Google company town, et cetera. If we got to that stage, it's going to change life in Silicon Valley, which, you know, and all of this matters for, you know, getting iPhones. Stuff matters.
Yeah, it all matters.
It all matters.
All right. Do you think Apple's doing enough to support the local community just in general?
Well, that's a good question. No.
All right. What do you think Apple needs to be doing to improve that?
Well, for one thing, Apple needs to stop getting sweetheart tax deals in local communities where they operate. Now, we've talked about that before.
Yes. Yeah, we have talked about that before.
You got to pay for the infrastructure that your company and its employees need. You got to pay for it. It's got to be paid for. Someone's got to pay for it. It should probably be the company with all the money. Just saying. And I know that not everybody agrees with me on that. I'm okay with that. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not dinging Apple here. You asked me if I thought Apple was doing enough, and it's not something that I specifically thought about. I mean, it seems like Apple could maybe plunk some money into Landed. Apple is certainly paying a crap ton of taxes to Cupertino, for sure. I think they have a sweetheart deal as well. But the thing is that like there is so much money going through Cupertino that even though it's a sweetheart deal, it's still just buckets of money for Cupertino.
Yeah. So in that sense, Apple is doing their part to help support the local infrastructure.
Yeah. Probably on a per capita basis. Yeah, that's probably the case. I'm sure that I don't really know because I don't know what the solutions are here. I mean, we need teachers, right? We need police officers. We need firemen, and either those people start getting salaries commensurate with what the engineers are making, or at least something in that neighborhood so that they can afford to compete with them for housing, or you end up seeing high turnovers for the people teaching your kids.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have the answers here. I mean, there are so many people who are so much smarter than me, who probably are thinking about this. And I got to salute Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan. Got to salute them for doing this. Got to salute Landed for existing. Someone is thinking about this. Someone is thinking about this issue. So that's a good thing.
Yep, I agree.
Because, what will happen if there's not some kind of mitigating solution here? And that mitigating solution could end up including, by the way, that we stop teaching kids locally and that we start teaching kids remotely. Maybe that's a solution.
I don't like that solution.
Well, no, I don't like it either, man. But it certainly could happen. But what happens is, like, if employees were to start saying, yeah, I really want to work for Facebook, but man, I mean, the school districts are just crap because there's no teachers. That means that makes it harder for Facebook to recruit. It makes it harder for Apple to recruit.
Sure.
For Google to recruit. That's why this is enlightened self-interest. Because that wasn't clear.
Yeah. No, I got it. But for whoever else didn't, and now it's clear. Now they're enlightened.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
I mean, they're listening to us, so how enlightened can they be?
Well, now they know you can pet chickens.
That's true. Right. Anyway, interesting move. It's an interesting move.
Yep, it is.
I could say it a few more times, but I'll stop. Let's move on instead to the three vectors. What do you think?
I think that sounds great. I loved their second album. It felt like they're trying to get their three feet vectors with their first album. But then it all came together in the second album.
That's not the three vectors I'm talking about, man.
Oh, well, okay, whatever. We can talk about whatever you want, whatever.
We are talking. So Chuck Joyner and I talked about this a little bit, on the road to Macstock interview that he did with me yesterday. And you and I talked, did you and I talk about it yesterday at CatMac? We didn't talk about it there, did we?
No.
No. Okay. All right. No. Yeah. Whatever. But what we're talking about is Tim Cook doing an interview with Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm. What did he talk about in this interview, Brian?
He talked about cars, right? You covered it. You tell us.
Oh, see, I was trying to set you up, but that's okay. All right. So in this interview, Tim Cook did exactly what no one was expecting, and he flat out confirmed Project Titan. He said that Apple has a car project, and they're very serious about this. And he qualified what the project is. Right now, it's about the software that makes a self-driving car. So Apple right now is not making a literal car, although that could change in the future. He left that open. But for now, they're actually working on the software for a car. And that triggered you into saying, this plays into the three vectors. And you tossed around important words like cook speak.
Hey, cook code.
Cook code.
Get it right, please. So most folks were focused on Tim Cook announcing that, yeah, we're doing a car. Sure. We're working on that software for car. Working on that autonomous car thing, right? That's where most everybody's attention was. I really thought the much more interesting thing was what he called three vectors coming together. Mm-hmm. We should note that Tim Cook asked Tim Cook's people, obviously, asked Bloomberg for this interview.
That seems totally reasonable.
Right. This is a situation where someone in Apple PR called up Bloomberg and said, hey, we want to do a story. Are you interested? And Bloomberg said, you know, how high, sir?
Yeah.
And jumped and then, you know, got in a plane or got in a car and whatever, came down and talked to Tim Cook. This Apple, for some reason, decided that it was time for them to announce what they're doing here. And it could be, it might have been, was it Dave that said, or was it, I guess, we've talked about this a couple of times. Might have been Dave that said that maybe it was because of Apple's stock performance. This might have been a defensive move there. And I was arguing that this could be because some regulatory filings are about to come out and Apple wanted to control the narrative.
That seems actually more plausible to me.
Yeah, or maybe even a mixture of both. Hard to know. But he talked about three vectors coming together simultaneously. He said electric cars, autonomous vehicles, and ride sharing.
And this is where you think Cook Code comes in.
Yeah, this is like Tim tells us what he's going to do. He tells us what he's going to do. It's like, you know, Steve told us what he wasn't going to do, and that's how you knew what Steve was going to do. Mm-hmm. But Tim just obliquely tells us what he's going to do. Like, he told us that he was going to compete with netbooks by making an iPod SuperTouch. He told us that, and you know,
and to wit, iPad.
Now we have the iPad, and he's told us he tells us things like the wrist is very important. Apple Watch. He also mm-hmm. told us that the face isn't the place for
augmented reality.
Computing, right? Smart wearable computing.
Oh yeah, yes.
AR wasn't the focus there. It was wearable computing, and he said that the face wasn't the place for that. And the reality is that Apple is probably going to put some wearable computing on your face, unless they cancel it.
Right. Yeah, we're just not going to see that today.
Right, we're not seeing it yet. And I wonder if that's why Tim told us about the car, because they are in fact going to kill their augmented reality product. And he doesn't want that rumor or that news, once it leaks, to kill the stock.
Hmm.
What do you think about that, Cale Yarbrough?
Considering Apple's investment in augmented reality, maybe they are killing their wearable augmented reality product, whatever that may be. But they're not going to back out of AR.
Well, no, and we're going to talk about AR more. Clearly, Apple is putting a big investment in iOS as an AR platform. The only question there is whether or not Apple ends up doing its own sort of, dare I say it, Google Glass.
Yeah.
That's the only question.
And I don't think Apple is going to do that for a while. I think they are quite content with getting into AR where we hold up our iPhones or iPads. And I think it's going to stay there for a while. But I could see where if investors think that Apple is backing out of wearable technology for AR, as opposed to they're just focused on this other part for now, where that could have a negative impact on their stock.
Yeah, that's possible. In the meanwhile, Tim tells us, he gives us that code. He says there's three vectors.
Mm-hmm.
There's electric cars. There is autonomous vehicle. There are autonomous cars, autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars. And there is ride sharing. So when Tim Cook says is
Apple's making Johnny Cab.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of people out there right now that are like, you actually made that reference. Wow.
It's true. I think that at this point, and I wrote about this months ago, that after Apple invested in Didi, they put $1 billion into Didi. Didi is the Uber-like Chinese company.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Uber of China.
I hear their company still has executives.
Yes. They seem to be doing well. And Apple plopped $1 billion into them. And I said, at that point, this may be where Apple is looking at going with cars. That they're not looking at competing. They're not looking at making a car that you and I would buy. And instead, they're looking at making a car that you and I hire.
Well, after Tim dropped his three vectors line, I think that you probably nailed it.
Yeah, it seems like that's the case. Now, the question is how that would manifest itself. Like, Uber clearly wants to own its own fleet. They want to fire all the drivers, or at least the now departed Travis. Is it Kalvinick? What's his last name? I just like him so much that I always forget his name.
That's all right. Kalvinick. Ah, Kalvinick. Okay.
CEO of Uber. They want to get rid of all those pesky drivers, and they want to have their own fleet of cars so that they make all the money. They're not actually making any money at all. They're losing it by the buckets full.
Yeah, but they're making it up on volume.
They apparently are losing money on every ride. Whatever. How do you do that?
I don't.
When you're
know.
Taking a cut of the ride, how do you lose? How do you lose money? How are they not minting money?
I don't know. Clearly, they're not taking a big enough cut because they're not bringing in enough money to cover their expenses.
Well, I'm guessing that it's really about their investments. And everything else, and that they're investing more money than they're bringing in. That's probably what's going on.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
So anyway, they want to fire all the drivers. They clearly want to own their own fleet of ride sharing cars. And you know, we've talked about this a lot in various different ways, but I think this is where Apple wants to go to. I think that Apple wants to wants to own the software being used by at least one ride sharing service, starting with Didi in China.
All right. So if you're going to be offering a ride sharing service in China, then you need to make it easy to pay. And everyone's doing that through their tech stacks now. So that would be a really good reason to add Apple Pay Cash in iOS 11. Like how I tied it into WWDC for you there?
I do like that. I do like that. But what I can't figure out though, Jeff, is how they're going to do it. I don't like, okay, so we know that Apple's making the software. That's all they're focused on right now. Mm-hmm. They were making a physical car. They are not trying to make a physical car as of now.
Right. That could change, but as of now.
It could change again. But as of right now, they're not trying to do it. So the question is, who's going to use the software that they're making?
Well, it seems like pretty clear to me for now, and that's Didi.
But yeah, no, that's fine though. On what hardware, i.e., cars?
Yeah, well,
are they just going to retrofit cars? That didn't make any sense to me either. I can't see Apple making some kind of a kit that could go into a Honda or a Toyota or a Hyundai or a Beamer or a Chevy. That kind of model is so far outside of Apple's expertise and entire existence.
Yeah, they don't retrofit gear.
No. So are they going to build cars? Like, for instance, could Apple become the Microsoft of cars? Open licensing model where anybody can license Apple's self-driving operating system. That doesn't make any sense either.
No, I think they'd be more likely to do a partnership. And in this case, Didi will have the cars and will design the cars that run Apple's software.
So is Apple going to have a particular model made by a partner company, be it a Chinese company, be it that, you know, one of those outsourcing companies that makes cars for, you know, makes boutique cars for other companies? Is it going to be, you know, Chrysler or Chevy or Mercedes or BMW, you know, is it going to be that kind of thing? Is it going to be contracted? Is it going to be branded? Is it going to be Didi branded or is it going to be Apple branded? It's set. I mean, like I don't know.
Well, this is one of those interesting areas for Apple because we're in new territory again.
We are in new territory again. That's very true. But I am confident that this is right. I am confident that at this point, Apple is not particularly interested in selling us a car. It instead wants to be involved in us hiring cars.
So maybe Apple is taking the Netflix approach. Well, and now the Microsoft approach, which is you don't need to be the only platform. You just need to be on every platform. And in this case,
yeah, I can't see that, dude.
I can't see that.
It doesn't, it's not Apple. I mean, so like above and beyond, like whether or not Apple wants to, you know, like some kind of animal, let other people use its software. Like above and beyond that, there's the fact that Apple doesn't have expertise in managing operating systems where other people are controlling the hardware. Yep. Apple has no expertise in this. And we're talking about people's lives here.
Yeah, I know. This isn't something Apple's taking lightly. I'm certain.
No, we're talking about liability. We're talking about business model. We're talking about management. There are all kinds of things here. The thing that makes the most sense is for Apple's self-driving operating system, the mother of all AI projects, is what Tim Cook called it in his interview with Bloomberg. What makes the most sense is for them to take that operating system, make a car, have a fleet of them, do ride sharing.
Yep. I'm with you. So
they do it in China with Didi, and they do it here under the Apple brand.
And, yeah, okay. I can see that. There's so many unknowns still, because we're talking about stuff that Apple has never made before, from a hardware standpoint and from a software standpoint. And of course, Apple's so secretive, it's hard to know what they have planned. But I think you're on the right track. I think Didi is involved in some way. I think that this is a ride-sharing program that uses self-driving vehicles, and it's probably starting in China.
Yes.
That'll be a first for Apple, product launch that happens exclusively in China, as opposed to coming there and starting in the United States.
Yes. Mind you, we're years away from this. Self-driving, the last 5% in self-driving cars is going to be harder than the first, probably four times harder than the first 95% was.
And you got to get it right, because you do not want a car that decides to swerve into other cars, run stoplights, smashes into buildings.
Yeah, I talked with Chuck Joyner about this in this interview that Chuck did with me that hasn't gone up yet. It's going to take years just to work out liability. Mm-hmm. Who's liable for what?
Yeah, and these are tough questions.
Like who's liable when a sensor gets occluded?
Yeah. Right? Oh, I know. It's just... I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Who's liable when someone else remotely hacks your car?
Because you know it's going to happen. I mean, cars are getting hacked already.
Yeah, it's happening now.
Yeah. Did you ever see the thing where it was a reporter, I can't remember for who, had a couple guys hack, it was a Jeep. And he was in the Jeep, and they took control over the car. They weren't even in the same city. Mm-mm. And they...
Yeah, I did see it. I mean, they weren't in the same city, and I did see it, and it's scary, scary stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a white hat guy that did it. White hat hacker.
Yeah.
He was actually saying, hey, look, I could do this. This is a problem.
Right. And so the reporter's like, okay, show me. And the next thing you know, he's like, okay, this isn't funny anymore. I don't need you to show me anymore, because he didn't have control over the car at all.
Yeah, it's scary. Yeah. So anyway, who's liable for that? Who's liable? Here's what I think is a very interesting intellectual the game to play is, who's liable when someone else deliberately causes an accident with your self-driving car? Like, they deliberately run into you. Like, you know, they figure out how you can come up on a self-driving car in order to wreck it, because they, you know, they're, for whatever, because they're awful people, whatever, because they're bad people. Mm-hmm. Who's liable?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Is it the owner of the car? Is it the other person? Is it the company? Like the company
is
who
it the software
who,
maker?
Yeah, is it the software maker, because they didn't prevent that? Because this will all be tested in court.
Yeah. It's not a matter of if. It is truly a matter of when. Yeah. This is a market that has so much potential. And at the same time, I can see why there are companies that are thinking, I don't know if I want to be part of that.
Well, but everybody is trying to be part of it. They all know it's the future. I mean, ride sharing is going to change the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Travis Kalanick is maybe a dick, but he had the vision on this.
Yeah. And, well, ride sharing is already changing the world. So the next logical step for that is to use technology to make it more efficient. And that means self-driving cars.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and clearly...
Hey, you want to know my hierarchy of steps?
Tell me your hierarchy of steps.
I'm winging this here.
Okay.
First step for self-driving vehicles becoming a thing is long-haul trucking.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We already have some self-driving that's happening on the highways, and there's testing that's being done, but this is all testing stuff, right? So I'm talking about like this is a thing, and it's happening right around you, and it's going to have an effect on your life.
Mm-hmm.
Long-haul trucking. The long-haul trucking is going to be from city to city, but the last mile, which really probably means the last 20 miles... On either end, it's going to be there will be large logistical operation centers outside of the major cities, and the town and the trucks will go by themselves from logistical center to logistics center, and then a human will drive them into the city to where they actually go, or out of the city from whence they came.
Okay, so it'll be a smart depot.
Yes, the smart depot, right, where humans either give up control or take over control of the cars, trucks. That'll be the first thing. And then, like, you know, for a while, we'll probably have humans in the trucks even when they're doing the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually that'll stop, and eventually, well, actually, you know, once we actually start figuring out, like, once we can figure out how to actually do city driving, we'll have a simultaneous rollout with both trucks and cars. Because right now in most municipalities, you have to have a license to test self-driving, because it doesn't work yet. It's hard. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, I'm glad people need a license to test this stuff, because
yes,
it's really dangerous to have a car on the road, regardless of what the piloting system is, computerized right. or human.
I totally agree. And from there, we will go to competing systems.
And what do you mean by competing systems?
Competing platforms, competing cars. You know, Tesla, Chevy maybe has their thing. Maybe Toyota's got their thing. Maybe Apple has their thing. Maybe Google has their thing. Mm-hmm. And these will still largely be a lot of cars that are being sold, and there's a little bit of mixing with the self-drive with the ride sharing market. Then you're going to end up having a fully automated ride sharing fleet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have some communications between, say, I'm just pulling things out of the air, between Apple and Tesla systems, so that Apple's cars can talk to Tesla's cars and make room for each other on the road. This is one of the things that Dave's been on about.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have all of the car systems talking to each other, so that all of the cars know where all of the cars are. And then the last system will be one AI to rule them all, and then the land of Mordor. Anyway, one AI to actually govern what all of the cars are doing, so that all of the cars are being guided by a central intelligence.
So at that point, do we pull human drivers out of the mix completely?
Human drivers 20 years from now. Human drivers, you know, there will be a... it will be prestigious to drive your car. It's first, it'll be prestigious to not drive your car.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be prestigious to drive your car.
So there'll have to be special lanes for human drivers.
Yeah. Special licenses. You'll end up needing a special license to drive your own car. And it might make, you know how the Germans make you take very intense courses before you can get a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we don't.
We should.
We should. It'll be the other way around. I mean, like, it'll be where you have to have really intensive courses to be able to be able to drive. And at some point, it may even just be illegal because the cars will be driving so close together that no human could operate within those conditions.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm expecting.
So that's Brian's hierarchy of events for self-driving cars.
All right. Well, I think that's actually reasonable. The logic works for me. And 20 years from now, I think that might be a little fast. Not because we won't have technology that can handle it, but because we will have humans that are very resistant to the idea.
Well, I mean, there is going to be some cost. I mean, you know, that economic phase where at first it's prestigious to have the self-driving car because they're going to be more expensive and you know, and basically only middle class and lower economic classes will be able to even they will only be able to afford human driver cars.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, that'll happen. But I think within 20 years, we're going to see, probably within 10 years, we're going to see the rollout of entire fleets of self-driving cars owned by major corporations.
Yeah. I expect like 10 Apple. Years from now, we'll see a lot of self-driving vehicles.
Yeah.
But still,
yeah, probably, and it really, the thing that's going to, there's two things that's going to be the factor. One is figuring out that last 5%, which is the hardest period.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is going to be the liability situation. That's where the variables are going to be. It's possible that within 5 years we'll have that last 5% solved. It's possible it could be 2 years, but I don't think so. Five years seems to be on the short side to me. 10 yeah. years. To me, seems to be like surely it'll happen by then. So,
yeah, we'll have a lot sorted out in 10 years. But I will be surprised if 20 years from now we have gone to pretty much a completely self-driving society.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be 40 or 50 years. Before we see that single intelligence governing all the cars everywhere, you know, and maybe it'll be like single intelligence governing all the cars in LA. All the cars in New York.
Oh man, can you imagine though having a system where you have to buy a car that's compatible with your city?
Why would you buy a car?
Because we live like in a country where people love buying cars.
Well, they do today, yeah. Yeah. But that's one of the, I mean, like if you didn't have to buy a car because you could truly get wherever you needed, because whenever you called a car, you're going to get it within 2 minutes.
Oh,
that's actually pretty cool. That could be pretty close.
I would love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, you no longer need a garage. You no longer need to worry about parking on the street. Something I worry about all the time.
Yeah,
I pointed out to Chuck, my car has been sitting. I own a car, and it's been sitting on the street in the same spot for 3 days because I haven't needed to drive. I've walked everywhere that I'm lucky enough that I have, you know, grocery store and restaurants and you know, enough places that I can walk to for most of my needs that I haven't driven my car in 3 days.
Yeah, I look out the window every morning, check on my car, because I don't drive it most days.
Yeah, and why, therefore, do I have a car? Well, because there are sometimes I need to drive, and because I do actually like being able to leave town. I don't want to rent a car,
mm-hmm.
but I'm probably at the point where I don't need a car. Close to it, but I won't give Uber any of my money.
That's okay. I don't think there's anyone there that would be able to take it right now. Yeah. All right. So I think that your logic train for the progression is spot on. I think that your time frame is too fast. And not because we won't have the technology, but because there will be more resistance than you are expecting.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. You know, when it comes to futurists tend to, and I always forget it, the order of which it would be so much cooler if I actually knew this. But futurists tend to, I think, underestimate the near term future and overestimate the far future. It's either that or the opposite. I can never remember which. I've got a mental block there on remembering which. So there's a lot of things there's a lot of things that Star Trek got wrong about 1990.
Yeah. Yeah, we never had the eugenics wars.
Yet.
Yet.
We haven't yet had the eugenics wars.
Right. So if we do have the eugenics wars, they will be late based on the Star Trek timeline.
Based on Star Trek, yeah. Yeah,
But they totally nailed the communicator.
We were going to talk about ARKit today.
Now people have something to look forward to.
That's true. Yeah, we could theoretically, although I'm not doing a show next week.
That's true. All right.
Unless we somehow do it on Tuesday. Because I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks.
That's true. Okay. So we have choices, and I'm sharing the choices now so that we're teasing people.
Sausage.
We could talk about AR on Daily Observations, or we could record our show for next week before you leave and talk about AR there.
Well, you know what we can do? Tomorrow on TDO, mm-hmm. we could talk about the ARKit demos that you posted. Mm-hmm. But then on ACM, we could record ACM next Tuesday mm-hmm. before I leave. Mm-hmm. And we could go deeper on it.
I like this plan. Okay, so everyone, on Thursday, you need to check out Daily Observations, because we're going to talk about some really cool AR stuff that I found online. Excuse me, ARKit stuff that I found online.
Since this is something that's in iOS 11.
Yes, and then to get our deeper take on the whole thing, then you'll have to listen to next week's Apple Context Machine.
Right. So if someone could tweet us and remind us this on Monday that we have a topic, yes, we'd appreciate it.
So on on Monday, June 19th, someone send a tweet to at Jay Gamet and at TM O'Brien. So we follow through on the commitment we just made.
Yes, we would really appreciate that.
Yeah, because it's not like we have technology where we could record that and remember it ourselves.
No, of course not.
We are so high maintenance.
We are very, very, I am very, very high maintenance. You're actually pretty reasonable, to be honest.
You are such high maintenance.
I'm totally high maintenance. So anyway, yeah, there we go. That's the thing. We're going to do that thing. Are you going to record to someone while I'm gone? You're going to blow it off.
Why would I blow off a show people love hearing?
That's a good point. You could get John.
I can get all kinds of people.
Cause what John and I are blowing. Well, no, John may actually have Walt, guest host Pop.0.
Yeah. I haven't decided who's going to be, the special guest on Apple Context Machine while you're gone. But whoever it is, it's going to be fun.
Oh, they're lucky people.
I know. It's going to be great.
Yes, it'll be great. That's the word for it.
Yeah, and it's going to be an hour of us sitting there going, oh my God, Brian, can you believe the stuff he says? Oh my God, I know.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That seems pretty reasonable. All right. That said, we are certainly out of time today.
Oh, we are so out of time. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
This is where I read that thing, isn't it?
Yep.
Oh, goodness gracious. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
Hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer or next week somewhere else. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, 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 giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, up, up.
I want you to show me how to do that medium math.